Wrestle Reaction back on the air Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, always live right here from Long Island, New York. I'm your host, Frank Manzola, and my co-host, Joe Omega, and we are back, and it is a bit of a WrestleMania withdrawal week, Joe. It's been now two Raws since the biggest show of the year, and I think as we were both just talking before we came on the air, it wasn't that bad last night. I actually enjoyed the show, and sometimes that can be, like, the hardest Raw to pull off of the whole year, basically, the week after. We're done with Mania, you're starting fresh, it's time to get new things going on, and obviously everybody knows that we're out of the biggest business of the year now. So where do we go from here?
Well, the one thing about last night's Raw proved to us that everyone has snapped back to reality. The great crowd we had the week before is gone. We're not going to have that pretty much, I don't think, any more the rest of the year. I think everything's going to be back to quote-unquote normal, sadly, for the wrestling world. And like you said, the week after the first Mania show is going to be a tough one to pull off. I like some things they did last night, though. A little different, some victories you didn't think you would see coming, but at the same time, get some head-scratchers in there as well with some of the things they've been doing.
Definitely, and I think after last night, that's what probably the internet wrestling fans are talking about most, and that would be some valuable people getting some big losses last night, and obviously...
And we know, I know what you're thinking, I know what I'm thinking.
Well, there's three. I mean, you have three champions, I mean, in all what people would call mid-card titles, obviously Ziggler in the higher spot, but he takes a clean loss, and we'll get into that, but let's get over first to title change last night. Kofi Kingston, new United States champion, beats Antonio Cesaro.
I don't have a problem with it.
First of all, thank you, WWE Universe, for giving us our first retweet ever. That was great. Got us some followers there. And I was happy to see Kofi win.
I'm happy to see another excellent match between these two.
Absolutely.
He tweeted, great workers. And, you know, they have this mid-card title that no one really cares about on Cesaro's waist. They may not care about it anymore on Kofi's, but get the thing moving around a little bit. And just get a little more interested in it that way.
Yeah, no question. And this was actually a rematch from SmackDown, as were a few matches last night. I actually did get to watch SmackDown this week, kind of feeling a little after WrestleMania, I should try to start watching it again. It's kind of like after New Year's every year when you join the gym and you're going to work out and it lasts about 2 weeks. That's usually what happens to everybody with SmackDown after WrestleMania. But I was a good boy and I watched it Friday. I have to say, I thought it was actually a very good show. And the Kofi Kingston Cesaro match was obviously a rematch from that. Kofi pinned him clean on Friday and leading into what happened last night. And I actually saw it coming, and I did think that it was a good move. It doesn't seem like Cesaro ever really caught on like WWE and obviously production and all the people backstage would have wanted him to. Obviously, the guy puts on great matches. I don't think there's anybody who would disagree with that. The fans respect him for that, but you just didn't get that jumping of the hurdle out of him, that Fandango crowd interaction, that's something that just separates you from the pack.
I don't think the yodeling helped at all.
No.
From that mid-card match, I'm going to jump right over to the Wade Barrett loss. And I really feel that maybe WWE is doing this because the Wade Barretts and the Antonio Cesaros, who have had problems getting over, I think WWE is starting to like pull the plug on them. Even though Barrett got the victory, they're kind of saying, wow, let's get the guys who always get a good pop out there and get some victories. R-Truth, out of nowhere, always puts on a good match, usually gets a pretty good pop with his little Jimmy-type stuff, his music. I like him better as a heel. But either way, he comes away with the victory over IC champion Wade Barrett, and Kofi Kingston comes up with the United States title win over Antonio Cesaro. These are two mid-card guys that are good workers that usually get good reactions from the fans. And maybe WWE is going to listen to the fans in this mid-card type of way, because these two guys, Barrett and Cesaro, have not got the greatest pops of all time for the past few months now.
Definitely not. But it's going into now a big week for Barrett. And that's why I wanted to talk about why maybe they did that last night with R-Truth.
I was very surprised
at that. R-Truth beating him clean. I mean, you think after the WrestleMania Raw swapping that we had with the IC title with him and The Miz, that maybe they let Barrett run with it for a little bit, because obviously they put it back on him last Monday for a good reason. And by letting R-Truth win last night, it tells me one thing for sure. They're going to give him a title match out of this. But where do they do it? Is this a setup for Extreme Rules pay-per-view, or is this a setup, Joe, for next week? London, United Kingdom, Raw, obviously going to be taped. We'll see it over here regular time. But
I'm going to call the rematch.
We know Wade Barrett is going to get a huge pop over there. what better way to service the fans over there for their hometown guy than maybe to have a reason for an IC title match, R-Truth pinning him last night, and now R-Truth challenges, and maybe Wade Barrett takes him out and retains in front of his home crowd and get a great reaction.
Intercontinental champion over in UK, it's a big belt for them.
Absolutely.
You think back to, you know, the British Bulldog,
Bret Hart.
Big Intercontinental champion, United Kingdom, these are their kind of guys. With Wade Barrett carrying that belt over there, he does bring some extra business in over there. Giving R-Truth the victory, like you said, gives him incentive to go on with this match again. R-Truth, good worker. You can expect this match to happen next week.
Absolutely. Quickly, I missed it going on the air. Thoughts and prayers go out with everybody in Boston who was affected yesterday, and we hope everybody's okay. And obviously, Boston is a great city. Joe finally got to go there last summer. I always tell him how much I love going there. If I lived anywhere else in the Northeast, it would be Boston, not New York, but it's just a beautiful city, and I hope everything's okay over there, and let's hope we find the bastards who did it. But getting back to wrestling, John Cena said yesterday, WWE never for a shadow of a doubt that they think that they wouldn't do the show last night, and they were going to go on as business, just like they were the largest public assembly of their kind immediately after 9/11 all those years ago. So WWE does what they do best, and they go on, and they give us a great show last night. It was very nice to go from all the horrific things we saw in the daytime yesterday to enjoying ourselves a little bit nighttime watching Raw, so that was excellent, and let's hope everything gets taken care of there. But getting back to Raw, it was very good for that withdrawal of WrestleMania Raw. And now it's a weird WrestleMania season, Joe, because one of the things I was trying to sit down earlier, create some nice topics for tonight, some different things, and I was thinking to myself, well, what usually happens after WrestleMania? What do they start gearing up for that they can really promote as a big event? Well, nothing really before SummerSlam except the draft, and that's always something they would do after WrestleMania. They'd always do the draft, whether it was a surprise 2 weeks after Mania.
Doing the draft this year?
Well, that's the point. Whether it was a surprise 2 weeks after Mania, or was it a month later? Sometimes they did it even in June, but I guess not.
Well, you know what's funny? What I think about WrestleMania is what comes after WrestleMania is, well, or was, Backlash.
Right.
Which was all the rematches.
But now they've taken that concept and gone to Extreme Rules, which is all WrestleMania program rematches with extreme stipulations, which I kind of like.
I think it. It's great. I'm right with it.
Because usually on WrestleMania, you don't get too many of those.
We may get into later.
We will get into that, definitely. But like you said, but usually besides that, obviously the pay-per-view after WrestleMania where you get all the Mania fallout, you have the draft. And it used to be a very, very big event.
Well, it used to be two very, very separate entities at one time.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. I don't know if you saw the news about a week ago, but apparently WWE is doing away with separate house shows. Raw and SmackDown are going to be combining into one house show tour. I don't think they ever had legs to stand on separate house shows. I mean, if you want to go to – me and Joe have gone to a SmackDown taping. Not the worst show in the world to go to. We had fun. It was a good time.
Exactly. Obviously, we have fun. We make it fun.
Right. Obviously, I'd like to see a couple of more big names featured on there more often if they're really going to try with that show. But they have dumped it off now. I mean, it seems like every year it just goes further and further and further down. I can even recall starting to watch SmackDown after WrestleMania last year and seeing it was a bit stronger than it is right now. Now you're canceling house shows and obviously SmackDown tapings by themselves don't do nearly as well in ticket sales as Raw does. I believe Raw gets even more money per ticket for their shows, even for the same arenas.
Yeah, SmackDown does have the cheaper tickets.
Cheaper tickets. So, you know, basically, where do they go from here? Do they do the draft? Well, the simple answer is no. I don't think they do. I don't think they have the goal of really keeping anything separate anymore. Am I complaining? No.
I mean,
for years, me and Joe, if we had done this show for 10 years, you'd be sick of us by now, because the whole time we would probably have been talking about how much we wanted the rosters back together. I mean, for a short while, Joe, it did work. I mean, I think back to
when
first 10 years ago, and you had, you know, Shawn, Triple H, John Cena, all these guys on Raw.
Yeah, the Ric Flair and the Vince McMahon.
Right, but then again,
that was,
you know, think about the SmackDown side, and you say, well, SmackDown's usually weak to that. But then you say, well, hell no, they weren't weak. They were having classics between Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, Big Show, having great matches with Angle and Lesnar throughout all that. So they had a very, very strong two rosters. At the time, it didn't seem like a bad idea to Vince because he had star power up the ass, if I want to put it lightly. And, I mean, just looking back to, like, the original night, like, I mean, just the top 10 that they took on both sides, it was noteworthy to talk about every single person involved.
Well, the draft itself was much more exciting than any brand split or any show by itself. The draft was like, oh wow, it felt like it was important. We always both said that we think the only way this would have worked as even believable as two separate entities, as Raw versus SmackDown, the only way if it would have been maybe a WWF show and a WCW show.
Right.
Two different names, two different entities.
But Raw and SmackDown, there had to be that friction there.
Exactly. And Raw and SmackDown, it never worked. Then, we brought in two tag titles.
Right.
Then now we still have the two world championships, which I still hate. Because now one, of course, pretty much takes over for the IC title.
Right. One is definitely not the same.
And it's not the same. You have one's a weaker belt. And it always makes other belts look weaker when you have two world titles and one's weaker. So everything else from the bottom, from the top down, just goes kaput.
Yeah, I don't believe in separate world champions.
No way.
I mean, how can you have two guys on top? I mean, there's always the goal of everything has to be, there has to be one top guy. And I understand that they were doing it for purposes of splitting shows and everything else. And like I was saying,
scheduling. They want the guys not to work so many dates.
And like I was saying before, you had that roster where you could take one show and the other show and have 5 to 7 big names on each roster. You know what I mean? People that you want to go see. Like, I'm going to go see Raw and I'm going to get to see Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Booker T, John Cena, Chris Jericho. And it's going to be a great show and I want to see all those guys. They're big stars. And then you're going to go see SmackDown and you're going to see Lesnar, Batista, Undertaker, JBL.
Eddie Guerrero.
It's just, it was very, very good. But now, obviously, what's been the biggest problem, and I think it all stemmed from the John Laurinaitis era of hiring, has been the star power in WWE. Because even the guys that might have made it to the top level weren't treated the right way and maybe were let out before they could be made the right way.
Well, here's a guy that I think has done pretty good business in TNA. I like the way he came up. I like his look. Is Matt Morgan. Just throw him out. I'm sure a lot of people don't like him, but this is a guy that WWE had and they kind of just washed away and that was it. And I think that this is a guy that maybe they could have looked at a little harder. Say, this guy's, you know, 7-footer just about. He's got a good look. He's not the Great Khali who's 7 foot and can't move.
Can't do anything.
I mean, how could Great Khali still be in WWE? I hate on Great Khali. I'm sure he's a decent guy or whatever. But then you have Matt Morgan who just didn't make it. Why? Bad writing. We have nothing for you.
Right, exactly. And I think the exact quote, you know, I was standing next to a TNA. We're both standing next to Matt Morgan. I'm about 5'9", Joe's 5'7". We're like really looking up.
Yeah.
And I just look at Joe and I'm like, wow. That guy's not a star.
How's that guy not in WWE?
That guy is not. I mean, and like you said, you're not looking at somebody who's totally immobile. You're looking at an athlete, an agile guy. Honestly, every time I've seen him talk, he's not even that bad either. It's just that I don't feel like he's ever comfortable doing anything.
He's a guy who could have benefited from a Paul Heyman or a good mouthpiece.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Even better to get him over. But, I mean, like I said, how is this guy not in WWE at all?
Well, it's just it drops the ball with the whole thing, and I think that's where we end up, and it's now after WrestleMania 2013.
Just the guy we're
throwing out. And, you know, a couple of bad years of scouting talent and management of what went on in WWE has obviously given us the biggest problem that I think everybody talks about on all these shows every single week, whether or not you bring it up directly or you're talking about it on the side. But it's the roster, and you don't have a deep roster of top tier talent, and that's why you're not going to be able to carry two separate brands. That's why you see things happening like Triple H a year ago creating the Raw Super Show and no longer having a difference between SmackDown guys coming over to Raw going over to SmackDown. You know, Joe, that was my beef for years, was like, okay, if you're going to have this way, why are we only having one match at Bragging Rights between the brands and basically two matches at WrestleMania with a Raw versus SmackDown guy for the whole year?
Yeah.
It seemed like, you know, especially the way we were so used to the 90s style of wrestling writing, that you're doing all these live wrestling shows, Raw and SmackDown, everything else. And they're very important also. They're live TV or even SmackDown tape, but it's still your main core programming. Why aren't guys from other brands not jumping over to that? People and everything else. And to me, it never made sense. I don't think it was handled properly. I think it just seemed like they flip-flopped on it a lot. Like, they wanted to handle it separate, then they wanted to mash them together, and it never had a defined course.
When they always mashed it together, it kind of got mashed together on a Raw program, though.
Right.
SmackDown never benefited from anything.
No. I mean, I remember last year, it was some crazy stat. It was like Cena or Triple H went over to SmackDown, right, to do a show, and it was like the first time they've been on SmackDown in like 2 or 3 or 4 years or something like that. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, how does that happen?
I always thought Friday nights was a bad night for SmackDown as well. Thursday night was the better night. When it moved to Fridays, I was pretty much done.
True story, the guy who used to be the head booker for SmackDown, I don't recall his name. I read an interview with him. He said literally the meeting they went to at Vince's house to move SmackDown from Thursdays to Friday is when he knew that within a year he would be out of a job and looking somewhere else and doing something, because he knew Friday night is where you go to die. As other shows have found out, not just wrestling. I watch Fringe, by the way. They moved from Wednesday to Friday at one point, and their ratings collapsed also.
Well, they say Friday nights usually where shows go to...
Yeah, it's exactly. And
this isn't TGIF on ABC.
And who are they catering to every Friday when they do the shows? They're catering to kids. They're doing mostly kidney stuff. They're catering to minorities. There's no coincidence that Booker T and Teddy Long have been the two last general managers for how many years. That Rey Mysterio was always sent over to do the SmackDown show. That Sin Cara was pushed heavy on SmackDown. That Del Rio was pushed heavy for 2 years on SmackDown. That Eddie Guerrero was the SmackDown guy back then. They know what they're doing. They know which audience is which. And obviously, the younger people are impressionable more to SmackDown than the older people who obviously get off on watching on Monday Night Raw, which we've been doing since we were kids. So it was okay. I think standing here today and thinking back on it, if you would have told me in 2002 I ever would have been really content with it, I would have probably called you a liar. But sitting here now, it did bring a lot of cool moments, but I don't think they ever capitalized on it like they should have. And will there be a draft this year? I very highly doubt it, because in an era where SmackDown is really just a replay show and a couple of matches that you might feature on as superstars or something on that, I don't think that you're going to send key players from Raw over to SmackDown, and that's just not going to happen. Getting back to Raw, Joe.
Yes. Getting back to Raw.
Okay, so what do we do with this whole Sheamus, Big Show, Randy Orton thing from here on in? Because we've now had back-to-back shows, SmackDown and Raw, handicap matches of Sheamus and Randy Orton versus Big Show. Where does it go from here? Now we have Sheamus getting jumped by Mark Henry twice.
Out of nowhere, by the way. Okay? Is Mark Henry just going to beat him up?
I guess they just decided, you know what, we're not going to mix Mark Henry in with Ryback and Cena at this point. Let's reel him in and do something else with him, throw him over to Sheamus, and I'm predicting Sheamus versus Mark Henry one-on-one in Extreme Rules. Does that mean Orton versus Big Show one-on-one, perhaps?
We may see a tag match.
Could
we
see a tag? That's a good point also.
We may see a tag match, Big Show, Mark Henry versus Orton, Sheamus.
That's a good point.
Things could go wrong in this match. This could, again, be boiling down to a Randy Orton heel turn. It could always be the underlying factor in this match. What Mark Henry and Sheamus are going to do is put on a good match, but matches that are going to be forgettable and not have much meaning. Sheamus right now, out of all guys, I'm really surprised I'm saying this, he's a little in limbo right now. He's not doing big work.
Yeah, but don't you feel like sometimes those guys that you see in WrestleMania season, the WrestleMania show, the Raw last night, doesn't it look like... I know me and you are pretty heavy with booking and where you put people in shows and segments like that. Doesn't it look good that he walked out first? That they feel like they can open with him and that draws heads? I'd rather be first than be floating in the middle.
I have no problem with him being first, and I have no problem with being in these kind of things. But this is just a guy that I thought was, like almost like you said, they're SmackDown John Cena. I thought he'd be doing a little more than this, especially now you have Dolph Ziggler, the heel, as world champion. He's got some things going on with Del Rio and Swagger. And I don't know if Del Rio or Swagger get over as much as Sheamus is. So, I mean, I want to know what's going on there. And if Orton turns heel, then him and Ziggler kind of aren't going to dance. They're going to go heel versus heel.
I think they're savoring Orton turning heel right now. They don't want it to get mixed up in a lot
Been, I don't know if you realize, but it's been underlying with Randy Orton. He's been extra nice lately. And Randy Orton just isn't that kind of guy that's going to be nice. He's asking, you know, Sheamus to take care of those ribs. He was the nice guy at WrestleMania. I think it's coming. I mean,
I don't think it's coming right now, but I think
it could come. I think it's going to come within the next month or so.
Okay, I say he gets through Extreme Rules.
Yeah, through Extreme Rules, but just to see maybe a misstep or
I agree.
Or someone hit somebody by accident.
Yeah, I believe I said that last week. You saw that extra pop and feeding to the crowd, even at WrestleMania. You know what I mean? Stuff that
and,
you didn't
and,
really
and
see.
And you want to know something? I was actually watching ECW, WWE. One Night Stand 06, and it was Randy Orton versus Kurt Angle.
Great
Orton
match.
Got booed out of the building.
Great match.
But at the same time, it looked like he cared. And he was really feeding off that crowd that was chanting Orton swallows, Orton this. They had some chance, let me tell you. What a great crowd. But Orton loved it. He was eating it up. I feel like even sometimes, like the past, you've been saying Randy Orton just doesn't even feed off it as a heel anymore. He's just careless looking. I don't think it helps his character. He's got to care. He's got to be smug. He's got to be cocky.
Well, I
really got him to the next step.
I've always said either way, heel or face, you have to seem like you care. If you're not putting out there that you care and your emotion is invested in what you're doing, good or bad, I don't expect anybody in the crowd to care about what you're doing either. I think the reason why Ryback has caught on so good is because the guy is pure intensity. And, I mean, all the things, those little things he throws out on Twitter about, you know, obsession is a gift and working out and everything else. It's like, you know, you can see that the guy is driving towards something. He's not just coming out there and doing what Orton did for the past year and a half, just coming to the ring, staring, hitting the RKO and leaving. And I like that you're seeing some of that from him. I just always feel like those people who put more heart into their character, good or bad, you're going to see it. It's easy to identify with. And by the way, Brock Lesnar last night, he found out why Heath Slater is Bret Hart's rag doll to throw around. Because, wow, okay? Brock just rolls out of the ring and catches Heath with that clothesline out of nowhere.
And we like Heath over here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And proceeds to F5 him twice on the barricade outside.
He really missed it, but Heath kind of helped him out by just laying over there.
Just like, landing on it and balancing like hanging and just staying, selling it more. Yes.
I really liked it.
I thought that was a great segment. It was funny because I believe I said last week when we were watching
Raw. I wasn't expecting Brock Lesnar either.
I wasn't.
It was a nice little surprise.
I said last week when we were watching Raw, they had that six-man. I think it was Ryder, Santino, and R-Truth versus 3MB. And I said then, with 3MB in the ring, I said, this looks like a great ring for Lesnar to just come out.
Yeah, he did.
And I missed it by 1 week. But you know what? It was good stuff. And I didn't think for a second that the Shield was going to come out, actually, when 3MB was calling them out, because you just don't have two groups like that going at it. And it just would lower the Shield's profile right now. Obviously, they're getting involved in big things. By the way, WTF, WWE production team, what the hell was that during the main event segment? Showing the Shield getting ready to make their entrance. And, I'm sure Vince had a field day with that one. That was bad. That was real bad. I'm going to show that to you.
Jump back onto the Ryback real quick.
Go ahead.
Mind you, John Cena called him the Ryback last night about 10 times, which I love every time. I love calling him the Ryback. And, you know, you talk about his intensity as a gift and his tweets. And really, I mean, I don't care what anyone says. When Ryback spoke last night, I bought it.
I loved it.
I bought it. And you know what? People compare him to Goldberg and all those kind of things. I say, this almost reminds me of something they could have done with the Ultimate Warrior if they ever had the balls back in the day to turn the Ultimate Warrior heel, get out of the Hulk Hogan shadow.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all too familiar to me.
Yeah.
But I really
bunch of heel groups jumping people, each other.
But this
it's absolutely.
But I thought Ryback was good, and then to have all the
opinions,
the videos of when Cena didn't help him when he was helping Cena.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, you got it. That is, I think it's well thought out, well planned stuff. They could go back that far. Even if it wasn't the original plan,
mm-hmm.
to even say, oh, we have all this, and Cena wasn't there, but you were here helping Cena. I like that kind of stuff. I thought that kind of video usage helped get the Ryback over more and to believe that he was really pissed off at Cena. And then him and Cena, you know, really, they could have a feud. Cena dumped him from the Rumble. That's grounds to fuse right there.
Absolutely.
Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels.
Absolutely. I always say, next to the top wrestlers, the WWE production crew has got to be the most valuable thing they have. And to have, first of all, it was a great throwback promo. It reminded you of something from the early 90s, where just sitting back there and just cutting the promo without the crowd around, which helped Ryback stay focused and tell the story that he needed to tell. And obviously, Joe, we hate hearing stuff like Vince thinks the fans only have a 3-week span of attention.
Yes.
And I thought last night was, you know, the appreciation for that segment last night that I thought most people did have proved that we love seeing those moments where you can actually gap those things together from months ago, from a year ago, whatever it is. And I thought they pieced it together very well last night. And it seemed like they legitimately sat back there with a pen and paper and said to themselves, well, if I was Ryback, why would I be so pissed right now? Because that wasn't done all these months for it to get to this moment, okay? They didn't say, oh, we're not going to have Cena run out and save him because later on he's going to blame him on it. That didn't happen like that. They got to it now. they're going to use that. And that's why I commend them, is because they sat down and really saw what had happened in this whole thing between the Shield, between Cena, between them. And I thought they did very, very well with it. I thought it was cool. And not to mention, you know, they could have even gone further back if you wanted to go towards Skip Sheffield and bring up NXT stuff. I mean, who'd they jump in the first night in the ring? Cena and CM Punk. Everybody knows that. So I thought that was really cool. We're Ryback supporters. I thought he did a good job with it. Would it have came over as good if the crowd was out there to bother him? Probably not. Could he have gotten away with it last night? Probably, because the crowd wasn't that into it. Doug O'Mac from Wrestle Rumors reported there was a lot of kids in the crowd last night with their parents. So
we have a question from Justin J. Hill in the chat. Everybody's going to throw out there. We haven't touched on this match yet, but I seen it was going around Twitter a lot. They want to know, is the steel cage going to be an old school blue steel cage match?
Yeah, I actually made a note.
Will it be the old school blue? I'm going to say no right away. Absolutely. It's a Hacksaw Duggan tweet. He wanted it blue.
Yep.
But I'm going to say no right away. Really, I mean, if you don't know anything about the old school blue cage, let me fill you in right now. The original cages were like the ones you see now.
Correct.
Were the fences.
You could see that Morocco snooker.
Yes, you could see it there. The only reason the blue cage with the bars came out was so they had a big enough cage for King Kong Bundy at WrestleMania 2. So just think for him to climb over the cage and a strong enough cage to hold King Kong Bundy. The only reason the cage came out. Of course, they kept it around for years, and it was, you know, ended up becoming a classic cage for WWE, a WWE-style cage only.
And they replaced it in the Attitude Era.
And they, of course, I think they will go and stay with the fence.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I don't see any reason for them to bring it back. I think it was just Paul Heyman's wording that had people thinking about it, because I think he said, you know, let's do something, let's go to an old-school cage match. And I think he was just thinking of all the great wrestling feuds in the 80s that were settled in the cage, and I think that's why he said that. I don't think it meant anything directly with the blue style cage. I think it will be the new fence style cage, absolutely. But getting to that, I mean, if you've ever watched the Ric Flair story DVD, there's a great, you know, so there's always great knowledge you can pick from these DVDs as far as how people book and psychology of wrestling. And I'm going to go with a quick story from that. Flair came into WCW, and everybody knows he fought Hogan 3 pay-per-views in a row before he fought anybody else. And Flair lost to Hogan the first match, and he lost to Hogan the second match. And then they wanted to sell the third match and make big money off of it, so they booked Flair versus Hogan in a steel cage match for the pay-per-view. And Flair says right on the DVD, I don't understand why they did that. It doesn't make any sense. The whole concept of a cage match is to get the villain who has been getting away with bullshit inside of the cage so that the babyface can get their hands on them and they can't get away. So you tell me, with a babyface winning at WrestleMania and evening the score 1-1, where does the cage psychology come out in this match, Joe? But there's only one reason you do it, and that's the reason you told me. MMA Brock Lesnar.
I did. I called for this one. I thought this was going to be the stipulation at WrestleMania. I'm like, they're going to put Brock in the cage. And I thought if Brock went in the cage, he would not lose in the cage.
Right.
Once they said...
Oh, I predicted Brock Lesnar victory here.
Once they say Brock Lesnar, Triple H, no holds barred, I'm like, Brock Lesnar's losing this match. They go in the cage because Brock is the quote-unquote cage fighter. He's the MMA kind of guy, and it's 1-1 right now. But if I was booking, I wouldn't even have had this go down, boil down to a third match. I wouldn't have put the stipulations at WrestleMania. Brock Lesnar should have went over Triple H twice.
Well, I don't mind how they booked the first two matches.
And you know, maybe Triple H could have got away with one the first time. Brock Lesnar definitely, it should not be a three-match thing. People didn't really want to see the rematch. I don't want to see the third match. I don't think three matches, I don't think this is a good enough feud or something that you see every week to keep me interested and want to see three matches. Like we said at WrestleMania, we think the match is going to be good.
Right.
These are good workers, but they're just... I was never into Triple H Brock Lesnar, especially when you had The Undertaker. I mean, Brock Lesnar and Undertaker could easily have had this match at WrestleMania this year. No, and we had predicted a long time ago what we thought was going to be CM Punk versus Triple H, mad at Triple H for hiring The Rock back. Let's get back to this real fast.
Giving The Rock a title
shot.
Punk goes nuts, loses his title, wants to face the CEO.
Wants to face Triple H. We said Cena Rock was going to happen. We said that from day one. And we said this leaves open Brock Lesnar and Undertaker. It should have happened.
And it will happen at a minute.
And I hope
Brock's
so
got two left. There's no question.
Brock and Triple H, I think, definitely has run its course. But now that's 1-1, need the send-off and Brock can't look bad because he's looked pretty bad.
No, and Brock Lesnar is winning.
And match. They admitted that Brock Lesnar did get knocked out of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, he's looking pretty bad. I'm sorry.
Brock Lesnar is winning this match. I'm going to tell you that right now. Very weird for a second match out of a series of three for somebody's career to go on the line and that not be the finished match. So now we see Triple H surviving that. And obviously he's gotten through the worst stipulation possible for him to lose. He has survived that. Now you're just going to get a match where Lesnar's going to put him out again. He's going to put a hurting on him. Triple H is going to be off TV probably after this for a little bit. And Brock Lesnar's going to look strong again by having beat him. My question is, why do you put these two guys in a steel cage match? I don't like that booking. I think right now, I'm telling you right now, listen to me. And remember I said this when you're watching the Extreme Rules pay-per-view and it comes to the cage match with Lesnar and Triple H. You are going to see a lot of downtime. These guys are going to be on the ground, not moving, big shots to each other, you know, just stuff that drags matches on. Joe brought up a great point to me yesterday. The match will definitely be shorter than the WrestleMania match, no question about it. But why not have two of the best combatants ever in Hell in a Cell fight in a Hell in a Cell match to even this out? That's the way you settle a score of three. And also, you have the outside of the ring for these guys to work with, which obviously at WrestleMania
you always called for. You like
they use the outside of the ring a lot. These are the types of guys who do that.
It just goes back to having the cage be close to the ring like an MMA fight. So, you know, really knock me to the cage, use the cage a little more. Brock Lesnar in the chat room says, Brock on the payback poster. You think there's a screwy finish that takes it to the next pay-per-view?
Absolutely not. There's no fourth match. I'm sorry.
This is no fourth match.
This is going to be the last time that you see Triple Jackson. H and Brock Lesnar face off in WWE. Even if he has another 2 years left, I don't see it happening again. Yeah. So I would say this is definitely it. As far as the other match, there's one other match announced for Extreme Rules right now, and that is Dolph Ziggler versus Alberto Del Rio versus Jack Swagger. Triple threat. I think we saw it coming.
And I think question we all know Joe. Who's going to win this match.
Yeah. Question, Joe. Were you upset that Ziggler lost last night? Does it hurt
him? I was. I just don't see a reason why this guy has to lose all the time. Now he's won the belt and he goes over and loses Swagger. Pretty clean.
Yeah, I'm not sure I was crazy about it
either. Damian Nelson didn't like it either, I believe.
No, he didn't. He definitely didn't.
I don't like it. I don't know.
I get why they did it. You had Del Rio come out earlier. He wanted his rematch. He was entitled to it. It was going to happen.
Like you said earlier, three champions lost last night.
Right. Swagger comes out.
Who's the validity of those titles then?
Swagger comes out, interrupts Del Rio. Obviously, Del Rio still has a right to that rematch, so he probably would have went straight to Extreme Rules to face Ziggler one-on-one. But now you want to have a triple threat. Do you make Swagger get a clean victory over the champ? Now he's got a right to
be could they have also. Made a DQ or something?
Yeah,
something like that
I agree with you.
I don't think I mean like, or at least a screwy fit.
I don't like the heel versus heel match on Raw last night. How's that? I just think it always comes off like crap. I was there the week that Ziggler.
I don't like heel versus heel either, especially with Swagger.
Ziggler and Swagger broke up at Nassau Coliseum with Vicky.
You have Swagger who doesn't get the best reaction. You have Dolph Ziggler who's like a heel that good fans like, but last night's fan reaction wasn't that good altogether anyway. It was a tough match. I mean, good match, but tough match for booking purposes and crowd purposes that there was really nobody rooting for anybody in the match.
No.
I thought Del Rio got a better pop than all three of them when his music hit.
I agree. Del Rio got the best pop.
And when the hell did that happen?
No question about it. And by the way, the crowd, epic fail last night on Fandango. Oh my God, it's like it's gone already after 1 week. And I think that segment kind of fell flat on its face, also because Jerry Lawler was in there too, which we're not big fans either. But
yeah, Jerry.
I don't want WWE to shove the Fandango thing down our throats. Whenever they do that, it's like there's a fad at school, and then the one kid that everybody thinks is a complete asshole.
Yeah, well, Pogs were only school for about a year and a half.
Right. So the kid who everybody hates comes in with Pogs, and nobody wants to do it anymore. That's pretty much.
Well, one good thing, the GM just brought up in the chat room, and we also brought up earlier, but United Kingdom is next week, and we all know that Fandango's music was number 11, I believe, on their chart. So we may have another Fandango-ing crowd next week.
We're going to have Fandango crowd.
But this week's crowd, I mean, like I said, take a hint from last week's crowd.
Right.
And obviously they didn't take the hint. No. They didn't go out there. They didn't have fun. Go have fun.
I want to know if the kids who were there last night even watched Raw from last week. That's what I want to know. Because, like, if I'm an impressionable young child and I see the crowd acting like that, I'm really psyched all week to go scream and do whatever I got to do in the crowd come Monday, man. I don't know.
What I mean, they had to be, it had to be like, you know, YouTube, go on WWE.com. It's plenty of ways to watch things.
It was viral, so everybody knows about it anyway.
Exactly.
I think they did a kind of crappy job of that. I think they should have just given Fandango a match last night, just had the crowd naturally respond to him however
that's
they wanted.
Exactly. You know what I was actually thinking? Like, they should just have it be natural and not have him come out and do this Fandango thing.
It's like they wanted the crowd to do it again and take over. And it's just, you can't do that. It has to just... has to happen when a guy comes out. You know, it's just, I didn't really think that that was that great. Tag team division, Joe, I'm not loving what's going on right now. It seems like everything's treading water.
It's a one-team show.
I mean, you got Road Scholars taking on Colley and Santino last night.
Why Colley and Santino are in a tag team together is beyond me.
What are they doing with Road Scholars? Are they really going to give them anything good at any point?
But Cody Rhodes was very upset that his match was taken on WrestleMania. I don't know if you saw that. Cody was like, everyone was bummed out, but Cody was legitly not happy that his match was cut from WrestleMania. And I wouldn't be happy either if my match was cut from WrestleMania. But even for Cody Rhodes, who's had Mania matches, who is, I think, is pretty much well over with fans, good ring worker, and Damian Sandow. These guys deserve the match. It stinks that a time restraint's always cut it off. But we have, you know, this thing and that. That's why people don't like WrestleMania sometimes. Because there's a lot of BS that goes on.
And it becomes more of a production and event.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
But you know what? But that's what it is. You have one of those a year, and that's why it has to be booked according to. And it has to be that show that the hardcore wrestling fans are not necessarily going to love. I happen to like the big production that it is.
Oh, I'm going to see more. I would have liked to have seen that match.
Oh no,
it
agree.
A fun match.
And it would have got some girls.
But the show didn't really hurt from that match being off. But I know that they would have liked to have their match out.
Definitely not. And going back to the tag division, where is Team Hell No going with the belts? Is it going to the Shield?
The Shield's taking the titles. There's only one team right now that could, I think, really make those titles look badass, and it's not Team Hell No. I think Team Hell No has done a nice job. But they've only really done a nice job for each other. They have not helped anybody else in that tag division. I mean, Daniel Bryan and Kane, both are workers. But overall, for two guys that are in tag division, whether it's booking, it's writing, they have not helped any other team in that division. I don't know if the Shield will help any team, but I think with the Shield having the titles, it'll make them look a little more badass. You'll see them in a different light when they have them, because maybe now when they do their jumps, they'll have to take your titles around their waist.
Right.
But overall, Team Hell No, they did business for nobody. Obviously, it wasn't their fault.
Well, yeah,
but
can you name one great feud that they had with the belts? I can't even really recall. I remember
they had a great feud with each other. They had a great feud with each other.
Pretty much.
That's not the way you build a tag.
I remember a lot of shuffling around in a lot of small matches, Primo and Epico, PTP, Road Scholars a few small times. Nothing ever promoted as big matches. Even you had the chance to highlight, you know, Ziggler and Big E and AJ at WrestleMania, and that really was kind of a throwaway match. So I don't really think they ever really got, like, a great feud. I think, like you said, Joe, this has been more about Kane and Daniel Bryan together than it is about who they're facing or anybody else. And I think it's a damn shame when you have two guys holding the belts that obviously do great business and are very entertaining that you don't have another team get a rub off of them. I mean, if it goes back to the Brainbusters and the Rockers back in the day, you know, the Brainbusters weren't the most popular tag team in the world, but the Rockers, at least they're getting to work with them and they're getting all the knowledge from Tully and Arn, which Sean obviously always goes out of his way to say that it made him into, like, a great wrestler, some of the best stuff he's ever gotten in his life. So you're not letting anybody grow on the roster, and if you're going to do this with the tag teams like this, then just do what you did a couple years ago and barely care about it. Don't let teams build up. And then, you know, like, what's going to happen with PTP? I saw people the other day on Twitter. They're talking about Primetime Players. Are they going to make it
separate? The Usos.
Are the Primetime Players
going to make it separate? I think Titus O'Neil could do some work separate. I think Darren Young doesn't have a shot in the world.
I think Darren Young doesn't have a shot in the world. I'm with you. But I see Primetime Players going the same road as Crimetime. One of them sticking around a little longer than the other, a la Titus O'Neil, but never getting that real support or push or anything like that.
Well, they kind of tried to give Shad Gaspard. So we're getting off topic here. Shad Gaspard.
Oh, it's okay.
They tried to give him a little bit of push, and it just didn't connect with the fans. I think Titus has a little more personality than Shad.
Agree.
With his whistle, I think if they throw him into a right situation, and that happens with a lot of things. They could do things. but also with the tag team division, I also feel that a team like the New Age Outlaws could do wonders for a young team. They actually would give a crap about who's in the matches with them. And when we had teams like Jericho, those super teams.
Oh, I love Jericho.
Those teams, I feel, help the tag division. Because you actually give a crap.
Jericho was great.
And Jericho, and you had
DX.
And then the Young Heart Dynasty,
which actually had some
good matches. And we all know they could go. They may not have the best, you know, charisma and personality, but they were having good matches and people cared about it because DX was in the match. Jericho was in the match.
Right.
You had headline
matches for tag team titles.
I mean, you kind of have to have a superstar that's been very established being a tag team now. Kane,
I think they could have done it with Kane and Daniel Bryan. It's just right away when they won the belts. I don't know if you remember last year. The second week they had the belt, they're doing the diner skit and they're worried about the comedy
and the
anger management and not worried about the tag belts.
They feuded with each other. No one tried to take down Kane and Daniel Bryan like each other. Take out DX or Jericho would cut these excellent promo in the ring with Shaquille O'Neal when they had terrible.
I'm not going to fight you either.
This man is a destroyer. Like when they had like those terrible guest GMs. But New Age Outlaws could do good business for a tag team.
Yeah. And I got to spend a little time with Kip over WrestleMania weekend, still looking in amazing shape, absolutely huge. When you see him on TV, you see he's a big guy, but you don't think the guy is huge. And he looks great. He's like, what, I think 49 years old? So, I mean.
He
doesn't look that old at all, man. The guy's in good shape.
I'm a tag team guy. The Bulldogs are right here.
I saw, you know, a couple weeks ago he did the short tag match with Road Scholars and then obviously got trashed by Brock leading it to Mania.
And you know what? Road Scholars.
They look good doing everything.
If you put Road Scholars versus New Age Outlaws for the tag team titles, you probably give a crap about the match just a little bit more.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best tag teams in WWE is New Age Outlaws.
If you put tag team titles, Road Scholars and New Age Outlaws.
And Billy Gunn by himself is one of the best tag team
matches. That would be right away the most significant tag team title match in over a year in the fans' eyes. No question about it. I think even fans who aren't familiar with the Attitude Era would still relate to it. And obviously everybody likes Cody and Damian. They're really, really entertaining. And I don't see anything going wrong with them. And I just think that would be really, really good. I want to see more in this downtime from WrestleMania now. I want to see more from the tag division. I really feel like there's some teams there that you can get some good stuff at. It doesn't have to be the most marketable, selling stuff on the planet, but you have to get some notable tag teams going and letting people look forward to tag team wrestling a little more, like my partner.
And I'm, you know what?
You love tag team wrestling.
But, and that just goes back to the thing we always say, that WWE needs to have a good card with things to do from top to bottom. If your mid-card's not that good, you know, people aren't going to want to hang around for the main event.
Absolutely.
You gotta have something that catches attention. Bottom line.
No question about it. And it's all about pacing and what the lower matches on the card do for the upper matches. I mean, I think we saw that at WrestleMania.
You gotta get the crowd popping.
Like, so many people were like, oh, but it was such a this-way show and then a that-way show. And it was really low, building up all night, and the undercard wasn't so great. Yeah, but if you're going apeshit from match 1 and 2 at WrestleMania, you're not going to have a voice or energy left when it's time for the Undertaker to come out in the streak match. And I love how they get you going with some stuff, and then we had the three
main events right in a row, and I mean, people started dying out.
No, it's just, number one, they should have had the P. Diddy concert in between those main events because
it was tough.
They weren't going to get a great reaction for P. Diddy anyway. It was probably going to be half and half, okay? People aren't there to see a P. Diddy concert. They're there to see WrestleMania. But it would have been something good for the fans to kind of just sing along with or whatever, a la Brodus Clay's stupid little dancing thing they did on stage last year.
I'm happy
but that bought time before Rock and Cena last year. Yeah. So it was not a bad little segment. It gave the crowd a second to reset after having some big moments.
There was no reset button. There was Undertaker match and CM Punk, then you got down for the beginning of Triple H's match, which started off slow. Then you had to get back up for the end of it. All to start going right back down and getting bored by the Rock.
They could have benefited from some Rock and Cena entrances like last year, maybe some big elaborate entrances because it would have killed some time and gave people a little spectacle to watch before they started building into the match. And I was surprised that they just kind of did this quick, regular entrance.
Yeah.
John Cena without a special WrestleMania entrance. Very, very weird to see. So I love picking apart timings and segments and breakdowns and show planning.
So we said right away, WrestleMania.
Absolutely. And I like how they did it. I really do. You have a slew of undercard matches that are good. They're not great. They're not going to make people go absolutely crazy.
But who doesn't want to see the Shield these days?
Oh, no. That was
that was excellent first.
And first of all, you
Ziggler
want, you want a match WrestleMania match. 29? Not one match on the card, even including the pre-show match, did not have a former world champion in it. Not one match.
I mean, and I really...
When can you say
hold on, and can you say any of the matches were bad matches?
Not
I mean,
one.
There's only one match I thought really...
Mark Henry vs. Ryback was
it did
weak.
Not it deliver. Was a bad it was a match. Weak match. The Ziggler match was pretty good. It was really, it was too short, but pretty good.
And then was Jericho, and... But it wasn't bad.
The Ziggler tag matches was short. The Swagger match Del Rio was pretty good.
Very
the
good.
Opening match I thought was very good.
Very good also.
I mean, I don't see why all the hatred for WrestleMania.
No.
I think it gets a little too much hatred.
I gotta let you
maybe
watch
I'm a little,
week too.
Maybe I'm a little biased because I was there, but...
I'm telling you, Joe, you're gonna
it wasn't
like
the greatest WrestleMania of all time, but it wasn't as bad as everyone else's.
No, you're gonna like the TV version. And you know what? I'm gonna say it right now. I don't particularly love the odd year WrestleMania.
Yeah,
the best
we all know that.
They've been bad. Like, 23, you can say whatever you want. It was a huge sellout and everything else, and a million pay-per-view buys.
Overall,
not Trump versus Vince. I didn't think it was a good main.
Trump versus Vince doesn't sell anything. For
right,
me.
Thank you very much. So that's your headline.
I like Trump,
so
but that doesn't sell anything
there.
For me.
23, 25. What was great from that? Taker versus Shawn, Hardy versus Hardy. That's about it. 27.
I'm not the biggest fan of the Hardys when they go against each other.
No, that's a good.
That
match.
That is a good match, but I never buy it. I never buy
27,
it.
27, horrible. Bad Mania, don't ever go back and watch it. So, in an era where the odd years have not been kind to us, ever since 21, in my opinion, Mania Goes to Hollywood, which I love.
Yeah, sadly.
I would say that 29 was the best odd WrestleMania since 21, without a doubt. And that's 8 years. And I think that is definitely what
you had a good card. I think maybe people would have been less upset with the card if it wasn't a rematch. And a rematch.
And a rematch.
And a rematch.
They're all rematches.
If it wasn't like that, people would be singing different tunes about the card.
Yeah.
But bottom line is you got a better Brock Lesnar and Triple H match. You got Taker versus CM Punk. The most, like we've been saying, it's the most predictable match on the card that held the fans in the hand the best.
Right. You cannot say WrestleMania was too predictable and then go and sit there in the arena or in front of your TV and mark out like a super fan because Taker and Punk had a great match. But I thought it was the most predictable show in the world. So you're not mad that Taker beat Punk again, and it was really predictable because Punk didn't have a shot in the world. If you think he did, like Mark Madden said, you may be a mark. Because he didn't have a shot. Not after 4 years of Triple H and Shawn Michaels. Not after the streak retires Shawn Michaels. There was no shot of CM Punk beating Undertaker. So in the most predictable instance of all on that card, you guys want to mark out and say it's the best match of the night. You can't say anything about predictability at that point. You become a hypocrite. Mick Foley DVD came out today, Joe. I haven't gotten a chance to pick it up. I definitely want to do that probably tomorrow morning. But I thought in honor of the Micker, our very own Long Island hometown boy, we would talk about a little bit of Foley's career and some things that we love that I put together for this week. Top five WWE Mick Foley matches, obviously. Cactus Jack, Dude Love, Mankind, whatever he might
have
been.
Before we get to the top five, your favorite Mick Foley persona, shoot, go.
Are we talking just WWE or all time?
All time.
Cactus Jack.
Cactus
I saw
Jack.
Mick Foley for the first time in WCW fighting Vader and Sting and all those guys, and I remember from a kid never forgetting him, and I loved the running elbow drop, and I thought that was like one of the coolest things in wrestling at the time. So I love Cactus Jack. That was always my guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know how I am. If it's your original gimmick and you got over with it in my eyes, Cactus Jack. So I remember.
If I had to pick a WWE gimmick,
Mankind.
I would say the
original
Mankind. Absolutely.
With the brown pants.
Brown pants, just crazy.
Ripping his shirt before
hair,
he
stabbing himself
versus
in the
Triple
leg.
H in the cage at SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah, the Heart and Soul opening match.
We like Heart and Soul.
Great event. SummerSlam 1997. Great event. But yeah, that's definitely my favorite persona. Least favorite, Joe?
Dude Love.
Yeah, Dude Love. I mean,
fun, but too much.
It's just, when you go back and look at Austin winning the title and then, you know, Foley coming out of nowhere with the Dude Love persona and being Vince's boy.
My favorite Dude Love moment is probably the moment when he won the belts with Steve Austin.
Oh, it was funny.
On Raw. Steve-O, baby. Looks like he's a partner.
Yeah.
That was funny.
It was
but
really
for a one-off.
No, it wasn't bad. I mean, it wasn't terrible. Foley's known for a lot of good stuff, so yeah. I mean, not one of our all time favorites, but you know,
I respect the guy's work,
and he's, you know, obviously Hall of Famer, no question. Before he even went in this year, everybody knew he would be a Hall of Famer. But get to it, top five Mick Foley WWE matches. These matches all.
Wouldn't be a list without a Shawn Michaels match on there, right?
What Mick Foley said in his in his first book, Have a Nice Day, was his most proud moment in wrestling and favorite match versus Shawn Michaels for the WWE Championship.
Of course, this is original Mankind.
In your house, in original Mankind. In your house, Mind Games, 1996, I believe, in the month of September.
Those are Mick Foley, those are Mankind kind of pay-per-view?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Didn't even have a clean finish. I think Shawn wins by DQ, but it was just out of control. You got to see a side of Shawn Michaels that you never get to see, fighting a hardcore match, you know, elbow drop through a table, just things that
Shawn
didn't
Michaels,
happen
he was
back
the best.
Then. He was the best.
He could. That's, I mean, honestly, that's one of those matches you look at when you see Shawn was a sexy boy and all this cocky, and then he really turned it on there. I think that match was a head turner for Shawn Michaels haters, actually. I think Shawn Michaels haters pretty much maybe said, this guy Shawn Michaels, not so bad.
He can fight, too.
He's not a little, little prima donna.
Absolutely. Probably the most famous thing he ever gets credit for, Hell in a Cell versus The Undertaker, King of the Ring, 1998. Takes those huge bumps off of the cell, through the cell into the ring with the choke slam, onto Tax, Tombstone at the end. Just a real massacre of a night.
Still don't know how anyone does the Tax.
Oh, my God, man. Oof. Just
keep it up.
That shot of him in the corner trying to put his tongue through that hole in the back of his mouth with the tooth. Yeah, speaking of Tax, Joe, exactly. Take the next one.
Triple H at Royal Rumble 2000.
Street Fight.
This is
amazing.
Memorable match. MSG, Royal Rumble. And
held up that card, by the way. I didn't think that Rumble
was. It was the only match on the card, really. I mean, the Rumble wasn't that good.
We had a great tag team tables match between the Dudleys and
the Hardys. You had the Dudley Hardys where Jeff came off the taxi. But overall, the Rumble was probably most memorable for Takamichi Noku hitting his face on the outside on the mat.
And everybody knowing what was going to happen. Rock and Big Show end up last two, and Rock was
just like you said, Rock guaranteed.
Yeah, it was one of those Hogan.
This was the match.
It was one of those Hogan style Rumbles that he just kind of was built for him to win, and you knew what was going
to
happen.
Justin J. Hill wants to throw in a Cactus Jack versus Triple H at No Way Out.
Also a great match, but I think the Royal Rumble match was better, in my opinion.
It's coming up right now, Justin. Here you go.
Oh, yeah. Fourth match. And
I really love
I would
one.
Say
I love this one.
Mick Foley's, without a doubt, his WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, it is.
Versus Edge.
And really, I think it was the cherry on top of his wrestling career.
Mania 22, Edge versus Foley. Probably the last big show hardcore match. I mean, you don't see a match like that on like a Mania anymore. You know what I mean? With a flaming table and
the flaming table is phenomenal. And do you remember how the feud started off with them being friends and stuff like that?
Do you remember why that happened? Mick Foley was the guest referee and counted the three fall when Cena beat Edge back to the title on Raw after Edge won the Money in the Bank that first time beating for the belt. So right away,
When Cena got the belt back,
he's going off to face Triple H at Mania, and what do they do with Edge? We're going to give you this program with Foley. What do? They go steal the show. And it was just
and
then
being friends with Lita and stuff like that.
And even her getting involved in the match.
Oh, man,
you know, sleeper hold on Foley. They're all flipping
they
over the ropes out of the ring. Just, she's setting the table on fire. You know, it was just
out
of control.
This is maybe my favorite Foley match.
Could be the best hardcore match ever, honestly, because it just has that big night pacing to it. It's not too crazy where like casual fans can't watch
but
it.
Had
enjoy
that,
either.
It had that big one that nobody ever forgets. Great build to that feud. We love
Edge
the match.
Shaking
go watch it
afterwards
again.
With the flames.
Oh, I mean, and again, Edge.
Blood in his eyeballs.
Another guy,
forget,
Edge,
man.
Who, I mean, if you ever go back and watch the Hardys and the Dudleys, I always felt like that Edge and Christian always gave the most moves, and the Hardys always took the most moves.
Yeah.
Now Edge really came into his own. He's got Foley working with him, and he really showed how hardcore, how sick he could be.
Yeah, definitely. And the last match on the list, I think, obviously, one of the most famous for Mick Foley, immortalized on film in Beyond the Mat, would be the I Quit match.
How many chair shots?
I don't. Didn't he say 30 something? I believe he said
31
or something like that. Because
and these were these. This was the the no hand up hit.
Oh, no.
Foley was handcuffed.
This was handcuffed behind my back. I'm going to take everything and egging the Rock on to swing for the fences.
Now, if anyone's going to ever suffer from concussion syndrome, it's going to be the Micker.
I love the spot actually in that match. One of my favorite parts of all matches when he dives off the like sectional of the audience
and hits
the electrical and all the stuff.
And all the things.
Looked really cool. And I thought out of all the matches that him and The Rock had, obviously the halftime heat match, the ladder match they had on Raw when Rock won the title back, all the things they did together, they had a lot of matches.
Halftime heat.
I just remember this standing out as the best match out of them. And like you said, it got that big motion picture moment where you actually see, you know, the result of that match in Mick Foley getting stitched above his head.
And you know what? Not taking anything away from this match, but matches like this where Foley takes 30 chair shots is what, I mean, I love this. This is a great match, custom match. But also, in the end, it kind of hurt the chair shot. If Foley could take 30 of them, one guy can't be knocked out from one anymore.
I agree, man. Definitely.
This is stuff that you have to worry about. I mean, 5 chair shots?
He was...
You know, maybe with 30 chair shots?
Unbelievable in that match. It was just something very...
His wife had to take the kids out of the stands?
Yeah, crying, hysterically crying.
Unbelievable. Poor Dewey and Noel.
Noel. Oh, man. But anyway, top 5 Foley matches. I'm sure you'll see a lot of those actually on the DVD. Came out today. We're going to grab a copy as soon as we can. I've always, you know, what's amazing about this is that Mick Foley, like Chris Jericho, is one of those guys who got to go through all 3 of the major federations when they were at their peak, when they were not run by Vince or anybody else. So you get to see like a great career in a great time of wrestling with a little bit of different flavor from all the different organizations and different things. And he had
a little more of the early WCW, earlier than Jericho.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And then he's got
early 90s.
Then he's got ECW and like in its upcoming stages.
Yeah, really good. Well, I think that's kind of – I think Foley was one of the guys that gave ECW its legs. When he came over there with Steve Austin and guys like Raven and doing, you know, those kinds of the first promos that I would ever call like on-air shoots, you know, taking shots at Bischoff.
The one with the belt and everything like that. Where WCW went
Austin
crazy.
Dressing up as Hulk Hogan. You know
Steve
I mean?
Amania. Bro.
Yeah, exactly. So that was some groundbreaking stuff, and I think you're really going to enjoy that. Check it out
for
sure.
You can see
that
stuff on the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD, which may be, in fact, the best
amazing
WWE story DVD.
It's literally one of those DVDs where you sit and it's so long. And because you're a real wrestling fan,
3 hours and change.
You appreciate it and you go, oh my God, this is so long, but it's so amazing because they tell us.
You will know, and you will know, and you'll be educated on ECW.
Everything. It's unbelievable. Check that out. And there's plenty of Mick Foley on there. We know that for sure. And congratulations to him for going to the Hall of Fame. He deserved it. No question about it. Thank you very much for being a part of Wrestle Reaction again. Also, please, WrestleReaction.net. You're probably watching it on here right now. Brand new website. Looks beautiful. Going to have tons of articles, all our latest episodes. Definitely check it out. I think you're really going to like it. WrestleReaction.net. Like us on Facebook, WrestleReaction. And, of course, @Wrestle_React on Twitter. We'll see you next week, same time, same channel.
Have a nice day.
Sometimes you got to push through all your obstacles, not me. No matter what the options are. There is no lose, there is no fail. Let's go. Seem like life go light speed. Slow.